Hey y'all, this is Emma. I just dropped Lily off back at her house, but I just realized that I forgot to mention the name of the book that I used for this episode. So it is A Thousand Lives, The Untold Story of Jonestown by Julia Shears. I highly, highly recommend it. It went so into detail, so in depth. It was a great, great read. And also I forgot to give a trigger warning for suicide. So now that we have that out of the way, I hope y'all enjoy the episode.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Uncovered, a true crime podcast. I'm Lily.
And I'm Emma. And we're tired.
Yeah.
It's been a week. It's like 10 a.m. right now, which isn't disgustingly early.
No, but for me, it's a little early.
Really?
No, I guess I wake up at like...
I wake up at like 9:30. Yeah. That's not bad. Actually, yeah, I wake up at 9:30 every single day.
But I woke up at like 8:30, so I was like...
I woke up at really 7, actually, because I feel like I was in high school again, because I put off my research until literally this morning.
I'm probably going to do that,
that's
too,
that's how I finished it. I didn't have time this week. It was a week, so the ending is kind of abrupt. I could have split it into two parts, but I was like, that's a little excessive. Like, this is literally my first episode ever.
Yeah.
And I don't want to start it on a two-parter, because I don't want that to be, like, a recurring theme.
I know. I was wondering if you were going to do a two-part, because I was like, she is putting in the work for this.
My options were sleep in and do two parts, or wake up early and do one part.
It's probably good. You know what? You woke up early, like, yeah, you're pushing yourself.
I feel productive. And then I have to go to lunch today. I feel like such an adult.
I know.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
This is going to be about the Jonestown Massacre.
Super excited.
Which Lily doesn't know a lot about.
I just know a few details. Like, which, just a basic.
Honestly, I only knew a few details. But I bought a whole entire book for this. And I kind of skimmed through it, but I also got mainly all of my information from there. So it was kind of, it was a mashup of skimming and reading a lot, but I almost finished the entire thing, because I thought that the last two chapters were, like, kind of extra.
I don't know how you did that. Books for me are a struggle.
I feel so accomplished when I read a book.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling.
I get that,
And I haven't read, like, an actual physical book. I've just been listening to books, so it felt nice. It was a nice little break. Okay. You ready?
Yes, I am.
Let's break it down. Go. Okay, so I just talked about the book, blah, blah, blah. Okay. James Warren Jones made his tragic debut into this world on May 13th, 1931. Does that make him... I'm always trying to do the astrology stuff.
Girl, don't ask me. I have no idea.
He's a Taurus, because that is my brother-in-law's birthday. Not the same year, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, born to his father, who was a disabled World War I veteran, and his mother, who was a factory worker. Mm. Research says he was an avid churchgoer as a young child, but this was actually not because of his parents... which kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
When he was young, a neighbor took him to church, and he became obsessed with it. Like, just enthralled with going to church.
Wow.
So, like, good for him, I guess.
Yeah.
His parents were unhappy, so I think he found, like, safety and stability and, like,
probably.
Acceptance.
Yeah.
So, the church his neighbor took him to was a Nazarene church, and he went through phases of, like, looking into different denominations and different branches until he finally settled on Pentecostalism.
Oh.
I don't know. Interesting choice there, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy Jones. If you don't know... Okay, so I'm just going to, like, kind of explain that, because I know that we know what that is.
Yeah.
You know
what? Well, yeah, sort of.
Okay, I'll explain it for you.
Yeah, I'm down.
Okay, so it's basically... If you've heard of Back Row Baptists, right? Back
Row Baptists.
Like, you know, super quiet, don't, like, put their hands during worship or anything.
Oh, yeah, me.
So, Pentecostalism. Same low.
I don't raise my hand.
You one hand? Are you a
none.
One-hander?
None. No hands.
Depends on the day. If I'm,
if you're feeling,
you know, if I'm really feeling the worship, maybe I'll be hit with, like, the one hand on the chest, like arm reached high combo. Yeah.
I close my eyes. That's about it. And just for a second.
Have you seen? Okay, I'm not gonna trail off.
It's okay.
Anyway.
We're good.
Okay, so Pentecostalism is the opposite of Back Row Baptists.
Oh, okay.
So they scream, shout, dance, speak in tongues. Oh. Sunday service is like a full body workout.
Wow.
You should, like, look up videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
It gets wild in there.
Yeah, I feel like I can picture it now. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Exactly. I just didn't know it specifically.
So,
I mean, I guess.
This is funny. This reminded me of my grandma, which, like, no shade to my grandma. I love that woman. But instead of playing, like, normal childhood games, he would pretend to play preacher.
Interesting.
Which I think is really sweet if he didn't turn out to be, like, a mass murderer.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of what my grandma did. She would, like, they had a pool in their backyard, and she would invite all the neighborhood kids over, and she would baptize them.
That's so cute.
I know. Not gonna lie, I did that as a kid, too. I was like, Grandma, that's a great idea.
So I was like, I never did that.
I was out here baptizing people in my Intex Easy Set pool.
That's really funny.
He would play pretend preacher, which, this is sad, a woman in the church ended up, like, trying to groom him into trying to make him, like, a child evangelist.
Oh.
Whatever the heck that means. I've literally
That's
never heard of that.
That's interesting. Wow.
And then his mom made him stop attending church because of the role it was playing on his mental health, because he started having nightmares around this time.
Oh.
Yeah, not fun. He grew up to graduate high school early in December of 1948 and started attending Butler University in January of 1949. He ended up marrying his wife, Marceline, that same summer. So, he graduated in December, enrolled in college in January, and married his wife that summer.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I think he was 17 when he graduated, and he had just turned 18.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, because his birthday's in May.
He was really moving.
That's
fast.
I know. That's a lot. That's a lot to take in.
Yeah, that's a lot of life change.
Yeah. His high school years, he really looked up to people such as Karl Marx, Stalin, Gandhi, and wait for it, Hitler.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So, he even ended up giving one of his future children Gandhi as their middle name.
Oh.
But, I mean, not wonderful people to look up to.
No.
So, once he graduated from university, he decided to go into Pentecostal ministry full-time. While in high school and college, only part-time ministry in Indianapolis, Indiana, he gained a well-known reputation due to his claims of having psychic powers and being able to tell the future. Because in Pentecostalism, it was known as the gift of prophecy.
Mm.
Which, I mean, I think people can have that gift, but...
Yeah.
I do think he was going a little hard here.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, I don't buy that he could do that.
Yeah, me either.
Along with claiming to heal the sick people, which that's also a very much Pentecostal thing to do, like,
yeah.
Laying of hands.
Right.
Which is, like, why it wasn't seen as much of a red flag.
Mm.
Because they were just like, oh, you know, he's been given gifts.
Yeah.
So, he's right off the bat, low-key fraud. He's a little loony. But he was able to sell it really well.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
He's one of those people.
Like the charmers. Like, uh-huh. Like Ted Bundy,
yeah,
you know?
Can talk their way out of anything.
So, one interesting fact that Jones kept, like, his entire life is he was always fighting for racial integration.
Mm.
And this was in, like, the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
When that wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
So, it was 1948 when he was 16, in a time where in this particular city he was living in, after his parents separated and he lived with his mom in Richmond, Indiana, where almost half of the adult male population was involved in the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh.
That's...
Wow.
That's a big... big number.
Yeah, that's really
And so
terrifying.
This was during the 40s and the 50s, so a lot of, like, the church elders when they were older in many, many branches of denominations were against racial integration.
Mm.
So him and Marceline even went on to adopt a few children, a few of them being black. And I find it really, really weird. Tell me that you see this correlation, because I don't know if it's just me, but he admired someone so much, like Hitler, whose entire life goal was to, like, completely get rid of a certain group of people.
That's interesting.
I know.
That's really strange, actually.
I know. So, he had some stuff right.
Yeah, and then other
stuff. Everything was wrong.
Yeah.
So, fast forwarding to 1954, some researchers say 1955, it just depends where you look, Jim Jones officially founds the Wings of Deliverance. This was a Pentecostal church that eventually became known as, quote, the People's Temple.
Oh.
Creepy. During this time, before the churches moved to California, he was very involved in ministry with homeless people, and even served on the board of Indianapolis Human Rights Commission.
Wow. That's crazy. He had stuff, like, he would do stuff that was, like, really good.
Yeah.
And then other things were like...
And they were just like, you're way off.
Yeah.
Over on that side, buddy.
Yeah.
So, and, okay, here's the next thing, though, because, like, everyone's like, oh, but he was so... you know, involved in racial integration.
Right.
He was so, you know, for people of color. But this is where it gets a little fishy, and I'm wondering if it was actually genuine.
Mm.
But his target audience in his ministry was people of color, because they were accepted from him in a time where they weren't in a lot of places.
Right.
So I don't know if he was, like, preying on them and just trying to get more members using this.
Yeah.
Or because he, like, actually believed in racial equality. In the later 1960s, he began rejecting traditional Christianity and Pentecostalism. Because, I mean, it's basically, like, the same beliefs. Pentecostal is just, like, you know, they get jiggy with it.
Yeah, right, right.
So he was, like, trying to remix it by preaching something he liked to call, quote, apostolic socialism.
Oh.
So now we're, like, combining religion, socialism, and communism. So
interesting.
Apostolic meaning a branch or denomination that is basically the same as Pentecostalism, just with a bigger focus on men and women dressing more modestly.
Mm.
That's really the only difference I could find, like, physical appearance.
Yeah.
And then socialism meaning a political and economic theory of social organization, which advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. Which, I find it interesting, he referred to his group of followers as socialists, when towards the end it was, like, a totalitarian, like, he's the head.
Right.
Kind of society.
I feel like that's just always how it is. They're like, oh, we're in this together.
That's how it ends. Have you ever read 1984?
No.
What?
No.
Oh my gosh. I can't remember if I had to read it. I had to read it for school. That was the one book that I read my junior year.
I never read books in school when I was supposed to. No.
I did this co-op thing where it was literally like a book a week. And wow. I think I read one and that's I just crazy. Used Cliff Notes for the rest.
And that's what I did. I just used Cliff Notes.
So I found two different reasons on why the cult moved. So we can... There, he has a group. He has a
people. He has a little group.
He has a little gang going.
Yeah.
So I found two different reasons on why they moved. One said Jones had visions of a nuclear war starting.
Oh no.
And that would start the beginning of a socialist, quote, Eden society.
Mm.
And due to the possibility of, like, World War III hanging overhead, which, like, same.
Yeah.
And nuclear war being a larger subject of concern now. And his vision that he had was a mushroom cloud exploding over Chicago, so it would take Indiana out with them. So
he had to get out of there.
He was scared. He said, gotta go, gotta blast. And another, like, reason why they moved said that his city in Indiana was beginning to have issues with his integrationist views in his ministries.
Mm.
But either way, no matter what, he relocated his cult to Northern California for a brief time until moving to San Francisco, settling everyone down in 1971. And side note, before the move to California, the quote, the vision that he had scared him so much that he moved him and his family to Brazil.
Oh.
Because in, like, some article in a magazine, it was, like, dubbed as one of the safest places to live during a nuclear fallout. So this man literally read, like, Times Magazine and was like, we're going to Brazil.
We gotta go.
So,
how old is he at this point?
This was 1971. When did I say he was born? 1931? So he was...
Yeah. I think so.
40? I can't do math.
It's okay. I can't either.
Is that... That's 40?
Yeah, we'll just say it's 40.
Yeah. Hopefully nobody yells at us. That doesn't sound right, but, like... I'm pretty sure that's right.
Okay, so he was
like late 30s, older. Early 40s. Yeah, so he's kind of like low-key old at this point. No offense to anyone that's 40. My parents are older than that, so.
My siblings are all like in their 30s almost.
Really? How many siblings do you have?
I have five,
okay. Silas, I think it was the other week or something, he literally... I was like, oh, yeah, because you have 9 siblings. And he was like, no, I don't. I have 8. And I was like, you literally have 9. Count on all your fingers and toes right now. And he counted, and he was like, oh, I do have 9.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
He forgot. Like, honestly, family same.
Problems. I know. You just had to, like,
count. I didn't really think about that.
Couldn't be me. I have 2.
I always want to count myself for some reason. So then I was going to say, like, 6. But you say siblings, so
yeah,
so you don't count yourself. Yeah, you exclude anyways, yourself. That's why I do that. Sorry.
No, you're good. He moved to Brazil for an entire 2 years, relocating his entire family.
Whoa.
But I didn't include this. This is, like, going off of memory, so if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But they moved back because, like, he couldn't find a job. He couldn't speak Portuguese.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, sir. I don't... He didn't have a plan.
Right.
Like, he was like, let's go to Brazil.
Oh, no, I'm scared. Let's go.
It's like the Nicki Minaj video. Which, we gotta go?
Yes.
Okay, so, sorry. He left the other pastors in Indiana to run his church. Mm. Oh, and by this time, hold on, I'm going to get there in a second, actually. So he left the other pastors to run his church in California. But without his bougie, aggressive sermons every week, I'm not kidding, this man would pop off. So the people in the church began to dwindle so bad. And according to the book, his weekly sermons drew the attention of over 2,000 people every week.
Wow.
That's a large, large church.
That's really big.
And after he left for Brazil, the attendance levels got down to only about 100 people weekly.
Wow. That's a real big difference.
So people weren't even really in it for, like, the church aspect. They were they were there for Jones.
Yeah.
Back to covering California, because I just realized that I messed my notes up bad.
The struggle.
I know. It's when I switched from, like, a biography about him online to, like, using the book mainly.
Yeah.
So, I wrote two whole pages on the same thing. I was like, why are we talking about moving to California again?
We're just going to talk about it.
Okay. So, the move to California really helped the reputation of the church / cult. I'm going to slowly start referring to it as a cult.
Yeah. Right.
Because California was more progressive when it came to racial equality and integration, unlike the Midwest. And the group, the church, the cult, quickly became involved in local politics in San Francisco.
Mm.
So he was playing his cards right. He was like, how can I get as much power as I can?
He came back from Brazil, right?
Yes.
And he's trying to get people to go back with him? Is that?
No. They don't move to Brazil in the end.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to jump ahead.
You're good. And the mayor even liked him so much, he appointed him as chairman of the San Francisco Housing Authority. Yeah. I don't know. I'm telling you. He was charming.
That's insane.
He was just a really good talker, and he had a really good reputation for some reason. I mean, I guess he wasn't that crazy yet.
Yeah.
So I get why people were kind
He's
of like,
just, like, slowly
You'll see a decline. You will. Okay. Like, he just slowly goes off the deep end until he's, like, literally losing it. Yikes. So.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's so funny. Perfect segue.
Wow.
Because I just wrote that I think this is when it started to go downhill, because it was all getting to his head.
Yeah.
He's like, everybody
he started
loves
to get more
me.
And more power.
Yes.
Everybody's like, yes. Ooh, this guy's
local
cool.
Politics. Yeah. He had literal followers that would follow him anywhere, and he knew it.
Yeah.
So that's when his gradual downfall of becoming the Eye of Satan's butthole.
I did not expect that. That really hit me.
I think it's from, is it from Parks and Rec?
I don't know.
Oh, I think Ron Swanson says it. Probably. Yes, he's talking about his ex-wife. He's talking about his ex-wife, and he's like, looking at Tammy is like looking into the eye of Satan's butthole.
I hate Tammy.
Me too.
The worst.
Both Tammys.
Yeah, both Tammys are the worst.
So, anyways. You know, he was out here having dinner with, like, super influential political people, like presidential candidates.
Yeah.
Mayors, governors, so.
That's crazy.
It's when it started, he had a big head. He started getting
He was probably, do you think he was, like, getting money, too, probably from people?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, I'll get into the money soon. It's crazy.
It was probably just all just piling on top, and he was like, I'm just the greatest person ever.
No, literally. He thought he was God. I'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
He literally says that.
Yeah.
So. Brief side note to say that from the outside, his motives seemed very, very noble. He was, you know, attempting to fight for this racial equality, and it turned into a massacre because no one told him, like, hey, you're getting kind of full of yourself.
Mm.
Tone it down. But honestly, I'm wondering if somebody did tell him that, like, his wife or something, like, would it have even helped?
Probably not.
Probably not.
He was just too far gone.
Because, like, as we'll see going forward, he was literally planning this, the massacre, for years.
Wow.
Like, dropping hints when he was still in California.
That's
before
really
they even
scary.
Moved. I know. And nobody was like, oh, red flag.
Yeah. He probably covered it up with all of his charm and his whatever.
I guess so. But he literally, I think, I quoted it in here, so I'll get to it eventually. So, yeah, I think it possibly could have been avoided if somebody, like, took him aside and was no. Or, like, a scandal needed to happen or something that he would get canceled for.
Yeah.
So, bringing it back to the 50s for a moment. So, we're going back. We're going in the Wayback Machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a man in Philadelphia who claimed to be the reincarnation of Christ. He referred to himself as Father Divine.
Oh, boy.
And he preached the same message that Jones would go on to support, which is racial equality as well as gender equality. until Father Divine began to control every single aspect of his followers' lives.
That's scary.
Convincing them to hand over their paychecks to him, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
So after Jones's visit with Mr. Father Divine, he claimed to have been, quote, nauseated by this man's presence and just literally everything about him. But most people think it turned into jealousy because Father Divine
probably
had thousands of followers who so blindly supported him, literally handed over their entire paychecks, even though he was, like, a crappy leader.
Yeah.
So, this, I mean, Jones turned into an even more extreme version of that.
That's...
Which is scary, because really that sounds awful already.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah, like, yeah. Ugh.
So, we're done on the Wayback Machine, fast-forwarding back to spring of 1973.
All right.
Jones was preaching a sermon in San Francisco, and he started it out with these exact words. So this is a direct quote. "For some unexplained set of reasons, I happen to be selected to be God."
Oh, okay. Nice. I'm glad you think that.
Sorry, don't have my set of reasons, just I'm God now.
Yeah, right.
Like, I feel wrong saying that.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Ew.
So he claimed he could raise the dead and was the only one who could perform miracles.
Prove it.
And anyone who else who claimed the same thing was a fake and a fraud.
Okay.
Yeah, prove sure, it. Buddy. Sure.
Picture it didn't happen.
So, bonus quote from this lunatic. You can't see me, I'm doing, like,
finger quotes right now. Finger quotes.
"I am God the Messiah."
Okay.
Then he threw a Bible down on the ground.
Oh.
Chuckled and said, "See that? I'm still alive."
Oh, no.
I know.
No.
And his followers were like, "Wah!" During his time in San Francisco, his church began to just blow up even more than it already was. So he started, I think, don't quote me on this, I might be making this up. He started, I think, the first satellite church, which was just televised sermons.
Yeah.
So he had buses bringing people to Sunday services. Wow. It was getting lit in the People's Temple. They were going crazy.
Wow.
So everyone described him as, like, eccentric. And well, most people would drink some coffee. Keep eccentric in your mind.
All right.
This guy is, you know, he's fun, snappy, getting jiggy with it.
He cray.
So, while most people, me and you, were drinking coffee right now, maybe a sip of Red Bull? No. Jones preferred a pill known as Dexys, which is short for dextroamphetamine, which is a central nervous system stimulant, and it is used to treat narcolepsy and ADHD, which, to my knowledge, he did not suffer from either of those.
Oh my gosh. That's...
And he was addicted up until the very end. Like, he was popping pills daily. The church began to suffer from, quote, outside attacks.
Ooh.
And I quote them for a reason. Uh-huh. Such as Molotov cocktails being thrown into the windows, dead animals being thrown on front lawns.
Oh.
And eventually, this brand new San Francisco church built by members alone was destroyed by a, quote, arson attack. Conveniently, though, all important documents were removed the week before, which Jones claimed to be, quote, luck. Like, okay, Mr. Divine, Prophet, why didn't you see that one coming?
Right, right.
How could you have stopped this if you, you know, you're all seeing?
Yeah, how did you not see that?
You're
faking
a fraud.
Yeah.
So, all these stage attacks trauma bonded the members a little bit. So they were like, oh, we're all in this together. We're all under attack for our beliefs.
That's really sad,
actually. I know. And Jones was just further convincing them that our beliefs are trying to be wiped out. We have enemies. We need a safer place to go.
Yeah.
Okay, so on top of this already...
You're getting heated.
This already brewing storm, Jones seemed to have some issues with fear of abandonment.
Oh.
Which, I mean, he had a rough situation with his parents, so...
Yeah.
I can see that being a possibility. But, I mean, you know, don't quote me. This is just my your armchair theory. Diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if anyone would leave the church and stop attending his meetings, he would throw a fit. He would let you know by sending very, very heated letters to your house demanding you come back.
Oh my gosh.
Like, there was no leaving.
That man is aggressive. So,
he decided that the letters weren't, you know, working as well as he thought that they would, so he just casually decided that no one was allowed to leave.
Literally
just, like, gagged. We're also recording in my closet today.
With the door shut. So
with
a
the door
hot.
Shut. It's getting a little sweaty.
It's
I'm like,
okay.
Around the same time is when he started to become more of a dictator than a leader or even a preacher that he once was. This trigger warning, child abuse.
Oh no.
If a child, quote, sinned, Jones would put them through electric shock therapy, announcing their sin to, like, the congregation and how many jolts of electricity they would receive, and even hold the microphone up to the screaming child's mouth while the shocks were happening. Like, look at this, guys. Don't
How is that not a red flag?
You tell me. I don't know.
That's so insane.
He was a sick, twisted bastard.
Oh, I would be so mad if I was a parent.
I know. So, this is where we get to the money part. Mm. He also, this is, like, around the same time. Like, you can see he's getting progressively worse and worse.
Yeah.
He started manipulating his followers into giving him literally every cent they had, because he promised lifetime care if they financially committed to him.
Basically, like,
and then
I'm bribing
once,
you, kind of?
Kind of. And then once he has their money, they can't leave.
Right.
So.
That's awful.
I know. He was, I have to give it to him, he was smart.
Yeah.
He was pretty smart.
Yeah, and not a way that.
Not in a way that I would want to be smart.
Yeah, no. But very smart.
He was like, what's another word for, like, bad smart? Like, is it, like, conniving?
Yeah.
He was conniving. So, yeah. They would sell their houses, clothes, every belonging, give the proceeds to him / the church to be moved into a temple apartment. So they had absolutely nothing to fall back on if they decided they want to leave. Which is so sad, but, like,
it's awful.
Good job, Jones, I guess. Like, he was doing a good job at getting what he wanted.
Right.
So, if you couldn't tell, this is where he really starts. I wrote, this is where he starts going off the deep end, like, 4 times, because it's just, like, it's so bad, like,
yeah,
slowly.
It's just, like, yeah, it's awful.
So, this is around the same time when he began to, quote, test his followers by having false mass suicides. And this is in, like, 1971, 1972. So, do you see how far back it goes? So, he got this idea from a member of the Black Panthers, when in reality the whole term, quote, revolutionary suicide had nothing to do with actually dying. It was quite interesting, but I don't have time to, like, go into it.
Yeah.
I think it was more of just, like, sacrificing yourself for something that you believe in, was what the Black Panthers meant when they, like, coined the term revolutionary suicide. Mm. So, of course, Jones twisted it up, and he saw it another way. He was like, oh, we're all gonna die for what we believe, but it was more of, like, a sacrifice, what the term means.
Yeah.
So, he would round up about 30 of his members, give them small glasses of wine, and drinking was absolutely forbidden amongst temple goers. And after everyone drank it, he told them it was poisoned and that they would all be dead within an hour. Anyone who attempted to get a doctor was an immediate traitor and was not willing to die for him, so he wouldn't trust them.
Oh,
so he'd be
gosh.
Like, okay, you're not coming home with me. you're not hanging out with me anymore.
That's really scary.
So, and he kind of got off on it, not gonna lie. Like, the whole idea of mass suicide, like, really, really appealed to him. And after he ran his first one, he was hooked on it.
Yeah.
So, he thought it was better for everyone to die than spread lies about him / his church. Mm. So, at this point, he considered loading up members into church buses and driving them off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh.
Or just, you know, have members put on a plane and the pilot be shot. Which one lady in the church literally got her private pilot's license for this plan.
Oh.
But it never ended up going through. So,
that is just
as
so
you'll
dramatic.
See, I know, it's so extra.
He's for the theater, girl.
He's a thespian at heart. And as we'll see, like, a few close members, like, knew about his plans, his attacks, all that, and they stuck beside him.
Like his henchmen or something.
Literally, that's a good word. Gross. I wrote minions at one point.
Oh, well, you know, that's good.
Henchmen's a good word, too. So, in 1974, about 15 to 20 church members set out to start up the, quote, Promised Land in Guyana, which is in South America. These were the pioneers, and they had to make this land self-sufficient in preparation for a bunch of other members to be arriving. So, years after the pioneers set out, there were about 100 people in Jonestown, which is what he named the town, because, he's obsessed with himself.
Yeah, he loved
it. So, Jonestown. It was going well, acres of land were clear, they had their own little medical tent set up, but it was just, like, little things that they had to work on now, you know, like, producing enough food.
You know.
Just the little things.
Just little.
So, right before the media coverage of scandals in the church blew up, Jonestown released an official report back to the church in San Francisco saying, Jonestown will be self-sufficient in 3 to 5 years. The only problem is that in just a few months, there would be over 700 members living in Jonestown that fall.
Oh.
So, they were not prepared.
No, whatsoever. Not at all.
So, jumping back to San Francisco, while Joan's little minions are in Guyana working their booties off for this man, in fall of 1975, Jones preached a very eerie foreboding message saying, "I love socialism and be willing to die to bring it about, but if I did, I'd take 1,000 with me."
Oh, that's scary.
That's a weird specific number.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was already planning to kill them before his plan for every church member to go to Guyana was even put into action.
Wow.
So, we're back in 1977, when everyone else permanently moved to Guyana, including Jones and his family, the same year shortly after... Oh, that's a mess up, so... I copy and pasted. So, including Jones and his family... Let me just restart it. It is on here, jeez. Okay, in the same year, shortly after the permanent move, an article was published about Jones. Everyone knew him, he was a powerful force in local politics, and was a well-known preacher all across the country. But this article was interviewing ex-members, some of who worked right beside, like, they were one of his henchmen, like you said. And then others were just, like, regular members.
I was gonna ask you, has anybody seen, like, is there nobody that thinks this is crazy?
Yeah, so...
Like...
That's when we get here. Okay. So, they were trying to expose the abuse that was happening behind the temple's locked doors, including the beatings, shock therapy, Jones' constant demand for money. This blew up. It was
good
everywhere.
No, that didn't.
And every newspaper, every magazine in the area was covering it. I actually found a PDF online of the actual article that was published. Oh, wow. It was long. It was literally like 8 pages or something on a newspaper. So it was like super tiny print.
Wow.
It was crazy. So. What did the temple do? They denied it all. No, they're after our beliefs.
Classic.
Oh, no.
Of course.
So, Jones just adopted they pray on my downfall mentality.
Right, exactly.
So, side note reminder, these people follow this man into literal wilderness, handed over their documents, passports, birth certificates, social security cards, valuables, all to Jones for, quote, safekeeping.
I can't imagine that. I don't trust anyone.
I know. They literally didn't have phones. They couldn't call their family members back home.
Right.
Or even get a flight back home.
That's crazy.
There was no going home.
Yeah.
But they advertised it. Like, you could go home. They advertised it like
a
mission trip.
Right.
Like, come to Guyana. Come help us.
Yeah.
And then, like, psych yourself there.
Spread the word.
But, like, they weren't doing anything to spread the word.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So, they were literally stuck in Guyana with Jim Jones. The last person you want to be stuck in Guyana with.
I do not want to be stuck with that man ever.
So... In Guyana, Jones wasn't this powerful, flashy, eccentric preacher anymore, but he was, in a way, exotic.
Ooh.
Because Guyana was almost an entirely black population. Mm. So to gain some credibility and recruit more people into the cult, Jones began basically pimping out beautiful white women to go petition for him.
Oh, good.
In their new home. So they would speak to men at offices, knock on doors, just go around handing out flyers. So on the big trip to Guyana, bringing a majority of temple goers there, so we're bringing it back to when they did move there, they had crates, bags, boxes, anything to move supplies. You know, they're starting an entire compound. You need supplies. So when it went through customs, they checked for guns. They didn't find anything, but they didn't check hard enough. So Jones had actually applied for a pass to bring firearms into the country, but when Guyanese officials never got back to him in time, he just took matters into his own hands, and he was like, "Oh, that's okay, I don't need your permission. I'll smuggle some guns into Guyana."
Classic.
So, he disassembled the guns and would hide them in false bottoms of crates labeled agriculture supplies.
Oh.
Because, like, who's going to check a box that says agriculture supplies?
Right.
So.
Which you should.
I mean.
Clearly.
They should have checked every box.
Yeah.
IMO. But, I mean, false bottoms, too. They would have had to look really hard. So, I don't hold it against them.
Yeah.
So, the woman who was actually head of this, like, the whole smuggling operation... was a probation officer.
Oh!
Great, right?
Yeah, that's really good. Love that.
Okay, this is when we get into, quote, White Knights and the Six-Day Siege.
Oh, boy.
Which I'll explain in a moment. So, there was a custody battle going on between two former Jonestown members to attempt to retrieve their child from Guyana. Because that was another thing that he loved to do, is that parents would send their kids on a mission trip to Guyana, because, you know, everybody knows who Jim Jones is.
Yeah, they feel like they trust him.
Yeah, and they, you know, he'd be gone for 8 weeks tops. He'd sign him up for 8 weeks, have his plane tickets back to the States, whatever.
Yeah.
And Jones would just be like, no. and their child would be stuck in Guyana.
I can't imagine.
So they would have to, like, hire lawyers and just, like, do everything they could. But then it gets messy, too. Yeah. Because it's...
He has everything.
And it's country borders and stuff. So I feel so bad for all the parents who had to do that. So they were getting divorced, and they needed their son back, pretty much. So when parents brought their children to this place, they signed over their children to Jim Jones, basically. I'm pretty sure there was, like, some kind of contract.
Yeah.
Where they gave him, like, legal custody or something. But this whole custody battle was stressing him out so bad. Like, I'm talking, this kind of boiled up and was one of the main contenders to the end result.
Really?
Yeah, that we'll get to. Interesting. And this wasn't the only custody battle he was fighting for children.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why.
This is when he starts to, like, get really paranoid about everything. And he was already convinced that the U.S. government was scheming against him and in cahoots with the Guyanese army. Where did he come up with this?
While popping a bunch of pills, probably.
No, yeah, no. This man was off the walls.
He was. He was.
Like, far off his rocker. Like, you know when you're doing dishes and, like, the lowest rack, like, pops out and you can't get it back in?
Yes.
That was Jim Jones' brain. So, one Guyanese politician was headed to the U.S. for some completely, completely unrelated business.
Oh, no.
So, Jim Jones was like, why is he going to the United States? I'm from the United States.
Oh, no.
I know, it must be all about you.
You're the only important one in the United States.
I know. So, because this is also after all that bad press about the temple, so he was like,
oh. Which probably was why he was so stressed out. Yeah.
He was paranoid. On September 5th, 1977, he called one of his adopted sons into... I lost my place. On September 5th, 1977, he called one of his adopted sons in and told him his plan. To set up a fake assassination attempt on Jones.
Oh.
So he had his son go outside and shoot towards the cabin that his father was in. Jonestown security, you know, ran into a shocked Jim Jones, who said he had a premonition of this happening, Lily.
Oh,
he saw
no.
it in his mind, and he just happened to duck down just the right time before the bullet grazed past his face. So
he really is for the dramatics.
He is. Like,
he loves it.
He could have just popped off a few rounds and been like, ah, no, save me.
Yeah, right. He ran out the back door. Like, girl, what?
I know. So... You know, he was so scared. He thought they were under attack.
He was shaking in his boots.
He was quaking. He hopped on the intercom, declaring an emergency, and that they were under attack, and everyone needed to go to the pavilion, which the pavilion is, like, quite a popular place, not gonna lie. So, this is where he announced that their allies had betrayed them. They were alone.
Oh, no.
This was not true in the slightest.
Yeah, it was literally his son.
Yeah. The next day, on September 6th, he announced they were taking refuge in the nearest socialist country. So they were moving countries again. To Cuba.
Oh.
Plot twist, they did not move to Cuba.
Oh.
So, oh yeah. Then he was like, psych, they're only allowing my family and I. So if we don't all go, then none of us go. Wow.
Wow.
What a stand-up guy.
Yeah, what a guy. Saving them all.
So, next day.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
So, did they not know it was his son? His son was just standing there with a gun?
No, because his son went and hid in the bushes outside.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, probably ran up with the rest of security.
Like, oh my goodness, what happened to
Papa,
me?
Papa!
Father!
Oh, father!
What happened?
Aren't they all right? Okay.
Anyways, sorry.
Then the next day, September 7th. So this is the 6-day siege that we're in.
Mm.
Their social security checks that they were receiving from the U.S. were cut off.
Oh.
Which, that was about $35,000 monthly.
Wow.
So this is... Yeah. Obviously, just another part of the government's plan to destroy
the temple. Shut them down.
Yeah, so next day, September 8th, Jones' new lawyer held a press conference to discuss the alleged conspiracy against the temple. But this meeting was rudely interrupted by another sniper trying to kill Jones.
Oh, no.
Arranged by Jones again. If y'all aren't getting the sarcasm in our voices, I don't know what to tell y'all, but...
You're slow, girl.
You're slow. Be faster.
Catch up.
So, just kidding. Love you guys.
Please don't stop listening.
Stay around. Now, September 9th, someone who was a former member of Jonestown, I know his last name is Haas, but I was really tired when I was reading this time, and I couldn't find the specific page, like, where it introduced him.
Oh.
But I know his last name's Haas. So, okay. He came back, and he has some kind of importance. Sorry, guys, if you're so ratchet. He came back to Jonestown, this time bringing backup with him, which included a court-martial, a superintendent of police, and a local Guyanese constable. Ooh. This was all... Oh, I don't think that's right. I wrote down this was all due to the public allegations and evidence against Jonestown that there was abuse going on in the compound.
Oh.
On top of the ongoing custody battle. Actually, no, I think that is right. So, this car pulling up looked like the beginning of what Jones was talking about when he said they were under attack. Because he was like, they're gonna pull up in cars, they're gonna shoot all of us.
Oh, yeah.
So, the people were scared, but they were ready to defend their home where they live. This is all they had.
Yeah.
So they asked to see Jones. Oh, so the people who came, Haas, asked to see Jones to serve him papers and court-martial him.
Hmm.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
But his members were like, no, he's not here, sorry. So they gave the papers to, like, his, like, left-hand woman, not his right-hand man, but...
Oh, yeah, his left-hand woman.
So, but she was like, no, and, like, literally just kicked the papers out.
Wow.
She was like, we're not doing that, sorry. Which, disrespectful.
Honestly.
Didn't your mother teach you to...
Be more polite.
Be more polite. Especially a guy who's trying to court-martial you. So, they had radios, like, all the higher-up
temple people. Oh, yeah, the henchmen.
Yeah, the henchmen and Jones, they all had radios. So... Yeah. Somebody radioed Jones saying, they're trying to court-martial you, and his idea for a mass suicide became even stronger. And he tried to throw a fit. He was like, you know when little kids are like, I'm gonna hold my breath.
Yes.
This is what he was doing.
Oh, no.
So, he threw a fit saying, redact these papers, send us to another country, or we're all gonna kill ourselves.
Okay.
Which worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
Oh.
The government was like, okay, yeah.
Why?
I don't know. So, officials promised to not attack or invade Jonestown for the foreseeable future so they could talk things out to, like, try to, you know, get on the same page. So, okay, great. No more mass suicide. They're going to another country.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, no wrong. He was still convinced they were conspiring against him and that they were lying to him. And they, if he couldn't have it, nobody could. So, he was going to take the whole town with him. He spoke about this plan with his closest helpers and appointed, quote, angels who wouldn't die in order to kill the enemies after everyone committed suicide, and then they would kill the bad guys that were trying to...
Oh, right.
Yeah, so he ran into another problem because it's a recurring theme. He gets his plan, he runs into a problem. So he had this all planned out, but how was he going to kill over 700 people and make them do it willingly?
Mm-hmm.
December of 1977 is when Jones really began brainstorming ways to actually murder all of his followers after his mother died that same month. So, this man's spiraling. He appointed his medical team to start thinking of ways to kill everyone. But they didn't have enough bullets to shoot everyone. Because that's like, what, 700 rounds?
Yeah.
900? No, almost 1,000.
Yeah.
Among some of their ideas were calling temple members' names out, blindfolding them, walking them elsewhere, shooting them in the head.
Oh my gosh.
And if they weren't sure that they were dead, just slit their throat. Yeah, I wish y'all could see Lily's face right now.
My mouth, my jaw, like,
on
dropped.
The floor.
Yeah.
So, dude, I don't know. He was spiraling at this point.
Yeah.
Like, badly. I don't even know what to say, man.
She's speechless.
I'm speechless. And then one other, which I guess this is more humane in a way, but this is a woman, she refused, I forget her name right now, I didn't write it down, but she absolutely refused to have any part in killing the children.
Mm.
She was like, can we please get them to, like, safety first, and then all of us, because, like, the kids didn't sign up for it, you know,
right,
it was their
parents. They have no idea what's going on.
So, her idea was for everyone to starve themselves.
Oh.
Because, this would get, not only because... Was it more humane? But it would be the best publicity for communism and socialism, which was what they were trying to preach.
Yeah.
So, it was around this time he began censoring incoming and outgoing mail more than he already was. He would just tell his followers they had no mail when they did. He wouldn't notify members when one of their family members died. Because he didn't want members trying to go home for funerals and then staying home.
That's awful.
So they were cut off from the outside world entirely. That's no news, no phone calls, no letters, nothing.
It's terrible.
And this was also when the food situation started to get really bad. The chickens, before they died of starvation, because they trimmed their beaks and also trimmed their tongues. So they couldn't eat. What? Yeah. They were pecking each other.
Oh.
And so they're like, we're just going to trim all of their beaks.
Okay.
So they cut off their tongues and they couldn't eat and they all died. So
that's right.
The chickens were only producing under 300 eggs a day when there was 900 people to feed.
Oh.
And the temple members were going hungry, but not Jones.
Oh,
Jones
yeah,
was living lavish.
Of course.
He had his own personal fridge.
Oh, classic.
Well stocked and enjoyed a nice cold Diet Pepsi in the disgusting heat. He also enjoyed chewing on ice when all of his members were sweltering in the heat.
Good.
Working their booties off. So,
that's good.
Spring of 1978. They're scared, depressed, hungry. They literally just want to go home, but they can't. They dreamed of escaping, but they didn't know how they would do it. And had to think about if the consequences of being caught were even worth it. They could be killed, tortured, whatever.
It makes me so sad.
I know, man. They were literally... I feel bad for everyone who was like, oh, I want to go help, and just got
and
stuck
then,
in
yeah,
mess.
They're just, like, stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful.
So it even got to the point where they started to not turn on each other, but they wouldn't trust each other anymore. Mm. So they stopped confiding in family members, friends, about how they felt, what they were thinking, and were just literally barely surviving the day. This was not the Jonestown that was advertised back in the States. This was literally hell.
Yep.
While Jones decided to tell his followers that their survival depended on if Russia could offer them sanctuary or not.
Oh.
Because he wanted to peace out of Guyana, I guess.
Yeah.
And that the U.S. won't help them or offer them money because they're embarrassed how well socialism was working in Jonestown.
Mm.
So, like, if it's working, why do you need money?
Yeah, right.
And safety in Russia was the only way to avoid a revolutionary suicide. So now he has all his members up in a tizzy, like, oh my gosh, we have to go to Russia or we're literally gonna have to kill ourselves for this man.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why he dragged Russia into this.
I know.
So, he didn't make that up, though. He was literally nonstop bothering the Russian embassy, being like,
let me in, please. Let me in, please.
Let me in. So, in October, a month before the massacre, he revealed at the community pavilion that Russia said no to them. It's now looking like death is inevitable and they're literally all gonna have to die.
Oh, great.
So, this is where we run into some problems. Jones had a separate plan with everyone, like each one of his henchmen he would talk to. They were in, like, they were in on it, but something different with every person.
Oh, what?
So, he had a few people experimenting and trying to cook up ways to kill everyone.
Hmm.
One woman in his little cabinet would not kill children. I talked about her earlier.
Yeah.
She just flat out refused. Another person, the doctor of the compound, actually, was experimenting with cyanide.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. In the days and weeks leading up to the massacre, Jones was ailing. He's sick as a dog.
Mm.
Which, I mean, you deserve it.
Yeah, honestly, I was going to say that. He was
growing more paranoid by the minute. Like, you thought it was bad already. No, this man,
he probably made himself sick.
Well, yeah, because he was messed up on drugs all the time.
Right.
And he was an alcoholic, a bad one.
Oh.
Even though nobody else was allowed to drink.
Oh, but...
Rules for thee, not for me.
So, he's a strong man, that's why.
He is.
He's so strong.
So, he had... The paranoia got so bad that he started having armed guards around his cottage at all hours of the day, would barely go out, hire guards to watch his food be prepared so it wasn't poisoned, and just in case they missed something, he had an antidote with him at all times.
Oh, good.
And he started carrying a gun in his waistband, as well as still planning fake assassination attempts to keep members scared. On November 15th, 1978, Leo Ryan, a congressman from America, flew into Guyana, bringing in an NBC film crew, reporters from the Washington Post, the National Enquirer, and two other newspapers.
Wow.
They were not expecting this.
Yeah.
At least I don't think they were. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. So, along with the people... He also brought the people that Jones was fighting the custody battle with.
Mm.
So, Jones was pooping his pants.
Yeah.
He was actually terrified.
I'm sure.
Quaking in his boots. So.
Good. He was
really good. I know. So, when this group flew in two more lawyers, they basically told Jones, you know, let us in or else. So, after being told they could not land on the airstrip because it was muddy, not safe for landing, they were like, yeah, sure, whatever. Did it anyways. It was perfectly clear.
Oh my gosh.
Which, like,
I feel like he just has his hand everywhere.
He tries. He really does.
Yeah.
They set out on the road to Jonestown before hitting purposely placed roadblocks in attempts to keep them out. So, what'd they do? Nothing's stopping them. They just called a bulldozer.
Oh, good.
I know. So
that is amazing.
I know. They got those logs
out
of the road.
Where did them go?
I know.
I'm so
they were determined.
Yeah.
Which
good.
I feel really bad for them. But
Yeah, it's really...
Do you know what happens to them?
No. I'm scared.
Just assume the worst.
Okay, I am.
So, when they got there, everything looked strangely rehearsed. Like, there were kids playing basketball. No one was working because he gave them the day off to make it look good. Mm. Yeah, it was weird. So, throughout the day that the reporters, the congressman was there, a few temple members got the chance to quietly tell the reporters that they wanted to go home. And they were like, we don't want to be here. Please help us. Because this is the first, like, outside person they've seen.
They've not seen anybody.
In a long time.
Yeah, or so had contact with anyone.
They were just quietly begging to get them out.
Yeah.
And Congressman Leo Ryan, what a man. Stan him. 2022.
Love him.
We do.
The king.
Okay, so Ryan and his little buddy were... They were like, go get your families. Anyone who wants to leave, we will get y'all out of here. Like, I'm not going to leave y'all here. So, Jones was, again, pooping his pants. Fear of abandonment. Oh, my God, they're leaving me. He was stressed.
Uh-huh.
So, in the end, 14 temple members were ready to leave with Ryan, which only 14. I guess the rest were too scared or something.
I bet they were scared, probably.
Yeah, so they hopped in a little tractor and set out for freedom.
Oh.
Once they reached the gate, Jonestown guards began shooting at them.
No.
A few were hit, but had survivable wounds before the guards went up and shot them all execution style in the head. So every person in the car was killed, including Leo Ryan, making him the only congressman to be assassinated while in office.
No.
The two others were reporters, Bob Brown, Greg Robinson, and someone named Don Harris. The guards rode back on the tractor into Jonestown, flashing the victory sign as they drove past.
Oh, good.
This happened on November 18th, 1977. The members of the People's Temple were called to the pavilion for what would unknowingly be their last time. Families sat together, friends sat with each other, and children sat on their mother's laps. Jones came out after an unusually long wait to give a 44-minute speech that is now known as the death tape.
No.
He started out with, "How very much I loved you, how very much I've tried to give you the best life."
Whatever.
He went on saying that one of the members who was leaving with Leo Ryan had plans to shoot the plane down, but this would turn Guyanese defense forces on them, and that they were parachuting in soon to murder them all. Jones went on to say they should be kind to children and elders, letting them go first. When guards came up to the stage, they whispered something in Jones' ear. He went on to say that it's all over because the congressman had been shot. His next line was, "Please get us some medication. It's simple. There's no convulsions with it. It's just simple. Just please get it before it's too late." Creepy.
That's really creepy.
So,
I hate that.
The babies went first, and cyanide was injected from syringes into their mouths.
No.
They were told it would be painless, no convulsions, nothing. Children began to scream in agonizing pain, convulse, and foam at the mouth. After all the children were dead, the adults were next. Everyone but Jones was dead, laying on the ground. Jones took his revolver, placed it to his temple, and pulled the trigger. So, literally, everyone in Jonestown is now dead.
Oh.
That's kind of all I have, but I don't want to end on that note, obviously.
Yeah, it's really sad.
We're getting to the point where officials found the bodies, so... Mm. They had a lot of codes that they would use over the radios, like heavily, heavily coded messages so that no one would understand it.
Yeah.
But the U.S. Embassy, they were able to intercept one that Jones had sent before the massacre. So they were like, it translated something like, there's lots of bodies.
Oh,
so they were like, we need to go check this out. So,
yeah.
I haven't really looked into this that much, but basically officials stumbled upon literally 1,000 dead people just laying on the ground all over. And the only few who survived, I actually watched a documentary. I listened to a documentary.
Oh, yeah.
While I was writing this morning. And there was one guy, and I think he survived because he went out on, like, a hike or something that morning and was gone all day. And he came back and he just saw all these bodies.
I can't imagine that.
I can't imagine either. And I'm not entirely sure what happened to, like, the guards.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah, I don't know. Because he had, like, designated angels.
Yeah. Quote,
angels.
Right.
But.
Wow. The kids, that was.
Oh, I know. That was
really
tough.
Awful.
That was. I feel so
bad. I can't even imagine.
I'm gonna show you pictures now.
Ooh.
Not of, like, the massacre, but, like. Actually, there's, like, I think it was in the documentary, but they did, like, a flyover of just, like, all of the bodies.
Whoa.
Oh, man. That's the first thing that pops up when you Google it. I was not ready for that. Dude. Yeah.
Oh, that is a lot of people.
I'll post
it. Like, that number, you hear that number and you're like, oh, wow, that's a lot of people.
Once you see
it. You see that picture,
dude. Yeah.
That's awful.
And here's what I never understood. So you know how, like, drinking the Kool-Aid comes from this? I didn't find anything about actual Kool-Aid in the book.
I know, I was expecting, I thought it was something like, it talked about how he did something with Kool-Aid, like he poisoned
He put the cyanide in the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, that's
what everyone
knows.
Yeah. But it wasn't mentioned in the book, which, like, doesn't mean that it's not true.
Right.
But I was,
That's interesting.
I know, but he just had everyone drink Kool-Aid.
Wow.
Poisoned. That's all I have for the Jonestown Massacre.
That was really good.
Thank you.
I'm excited for the next episode.
Should we let them know what we're doing every week? Because
we
kind of like it when podcasts
do. Yeah, I do. I definitely do.
But I also kind of like the surprise aspect of it. Yeah, I don't know. Let us know. Comment down below. Yeah. I'm kidding.
Like, comment down below.
Go to the Instagram. Let me know. Go to the Instagram. I'll post pictures. Oh, he was also ugly.
Oh, I
like, are we surprised? Like. Actually, I lied. He low-key was kind of fine when he was younger. Just like Ted Bundy.
Yikes.
Just like Ted Bundy.
Should I say what I'm doing this week, or should I not?
Just, like, say the title of the book that you're reading about it, because that's, like, creepy.
Okay. My case next week is gonna be called... It's called The Footsteps in the Snow, which is, like, I'm super excited.
I don't know, Lily finds cases that I, like, have never heard of, and I just cover, like, the basic ones. Actually, no, I lied again. He's definitely not fine. He kind of had, like, a... Ew. Oh, wait, no, he was low-key fine. I guess it just depends on the angle for this man.
Where?
You don't see it?
No, I don't see it at all.
Did I ever mention that his wife's name was Marceline?
No, you didn't.
I could have... Oh, that
must
have been
when I... Did she die too, then?
Oh, yeah, no, everyone. Yeah.
She was with them till the end.
I know.
I could never. I'd be like, but you're crazy.
Also, I did... In the book, it said that a, like, eyewitness account from a member who ended up surviving or something, or, like, they wrote it in their journal, but towards the end, when he was getting real, real loony, they were, like, walking past his house, and they heard him, like, frantically screaming, white knight, which means, like, that's the emergency.
Oh.
That's the emergency thing. But his wife was like, sit down, no, you're overreacting. So, I know that she's dead.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if she was, like, really with it to the end, or was just, like, so depressed she was like, forget this.
Yeah.
I'm literally out. Oh. But yeah. So,
all right,
that's the case.
Thanks for listening.
Hope y'all made it this far.
I know.
This is gonna be like, because we have two other clips besides this one.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Let us know what y'all thought. So we hope you keep listening.
I know. This is so fun. Second episode.
I know. This is really enjoyable. I'm liking this. I'll post on the Instagram pictures, which you should go. Oh, we have socials we can shout out.
Yeah.
Now. Can you pull it up on your phone? I totally forgot what the name was. I think it's The Uncovered Pod on Instagram.
Yeah. Our Instagram is Uncovered the Pod. So go follow it. We have 19 followers right now.
Do we actually?
Yeah, 19.
That's so many.
Yeah. And then my case, the pictures are posted. So.
Yes. Susan Smith. So yeah. Go check that out. I also made a TikTok for us.
Oh, you did?
I
didn't know that.
I think it's just Uncovered Podcast.
Oh, nice.
Or The Uncovered Podcast. I don't know. Nice. Just look up variations. You'll probably find it.
Yeah.
We're gonna stick a sticky note right here that has our social media handles.
Good idea. That's a good idea.
Okay. Hope you keep listening.
Yeah.